So first, I would like to thank the organizers for this opportunity on my second time in Toronto, and I'm enjoying very much. So I'm going to talk about measure heterogeneity for eumolonal maps. That's the joint work with Gugu. So the question that I wanted to study is the following: how regular are conjugacies between one-dimensional maps? I'm going to be more specific later, but let's first take two simple examples. First, suspended maps on the cycle. So there is this amazing result by short paper, but it's amazing result by Shelby and Sullivan that says the following. Suppose you have two expanding maps in the cycle. So if for expanding maps, there is just one topological invariant that's the degree of this map. If you have two maps of the same degree, there is a topological conjugacy between the two maps. And this result says that if this conjugacy is actually absolutely continuous, then I'm going to be smooth. So that's wonderful. This slow, small regularity implies this very strong regularity. But this point has a lot of periodic points. And the periodic points have eigenvalues, and these eigenvalues are preserved by smooth maps. So this implies that the conjugacies between expanding maps usually are not absolutely continuous. Okay, so it's very unlikely that the conjugacy between expanding maps are absolutely continuous. So they are not very regular. On the other hand, if you take circle diffeomorphisms, there are many lectures that they tell something about that. So suppose you have two circle diffeomorphisms with the same rotation number, and this rotation number satisfies some number theoretical properties, the Diophantine condition, then the conjugacy is actually smooth for free. So in this topological class of maps, you have the conjugacy, the topological conjugacy is always very regular. So the two striking very different situations in one-dimensional dynamics. Just one more example. Let's take one-dimensional maps on the complex one-dimensional maps. So in this situation, the conjugacies are quasi-conformal maps, and quasi-conformal maps are a wonderful class to work with. They're a really amazing class of maps. You can do actually nice things to QC maps. You can cut and paste. You can deform. So you can do a lot of things. And in the measure theoretical sense, there are in the measure theoretical sense, they are very nice because QC maps are absolutely continuous and they preserve sets of Hausdorff dimension too, of maximal Hausdorff dimension. That means that if you wanted to study measure theoretical properties of neuromorphic dynamics, you need just study one of these maps in this topological class, and if you study one of them, you study all of them. For instance, if you prove that a Julia set has positive Lebesgue measure for some quadratic polynomial, then for all maps which are quasi-conformally conjugate with this, they have positive Lebesgue measure. Okay? But when you see that in real one-dimensional dynamics, let's say unimodal maps, the conjugacies are usually just quasi-symmetric maps, and quasi-symmetric is a very poor condition in one-dimensional dynamics, in one-dimensional real dynamics. They are not absolutely continuous in general. They do not preserve sets of Hausdorff dimension 1, of maximal Hausdorff dimension. So they are bad, bad, bad guys. Okay? So if you are looking for, I wanted to look for topological classes of, let's say, unimodal maps where the conjugacy is very good. Is that possible? So there is this beautiful result by De Mello and Martins that says the following. Suppose you have two unimodal maps, nice unimodal maps, and let's suppose that there is a topological conjugacy between them, and this topological conjugacy is absolutely continuous, preserves sets of zero Lebesgue measure. Then they proved that this conjugacy is actually smooth, C1 if the maps are CR, if the maps are CR. Okay? But there is assumptions in this theorem, and the assumptions are the following. F and G do not have periodic attractors. You cannot have a periodic orbital that attracts everybody. F and G are not infinitely homologizable, and F and G do not have wide attractors. I'm sure that you know what's that, you know what's that, probably you don't know what's that, so I'm going to explain a little bit later. So if you are looking for classes of topological class of maps where the conjugacy is very regular, you should look in maps which does not satisfy one of these conditions, right? These conditions is obviously necessary. It's very easy to construct absolute continuous conjugacies which are not smooth if you have periodic attractors, but it's not very clear about these two other situations here. So I'm not going to talk too much about this one because somehow the analysis of this situation is kind of simpler than in this one. So first I'm going to explain to you what's a void attractor, and then I'm going to state my results. So what is a void attractor? So suppose you have a dynamical system in a manifold. So there are at least two natural concepts to attractor in dynamics: the measure theoretical one and the topological one. There is a beautiful paper by Milner in the 80s about the concept of attractors. And let's say the topological attractor. What's a topological attractor? You have a topological attractor if you have a closed set with dense orbit inside, in such a way that a generic point in your manifold converges to this compact set, this closed set. So you have a topological attractor then. And if lambda is a measure theoretical attractor, if for almost every point the orbit converges to this set, in this case you have a measure theoretical attractor. What is very interesting is that there are dynamical systems where the measure theoretical attractor is different from the topological attractor. It's very strange, but happens in very simple dynamical systems. And the simplest dynamical systems that I know, which has void attractors, are Fibonacci maps. So let me explain what is a Fibonacci map. First, I'm going to explain what is Fibonacci normalization. Aha, normalization. Oh, right. Sorry? Yeah, I suppose people call the measure theoretical attractor in this case the void attractor, because they are much more strange than the topological attractor. Yes. Okay. Okay. So what's a Fibonacci map? So first, before to explain what's a Fibonacci map, I need to explain what's Fibonacci normalization. So take a map like that. You have a unicritical component and a monotonic component. So let's call this part of the domain central domain, the other lateral domain. And let's suppose that the dynamics is more or less like that. The critical point is zero. When you take the first iteration of the critical point, it falls in the lateral PC, in the lateral domain. When you iterate once more, it falls in the central one. And when you iterate once more, you will stay in the central one. Okay? And let's assume a little more. Well, let's assume that the critical point, the image of the critical point is very high, in such a way that zero belongs to the image of the central domain. So in this case, I will say that F is Fibonacci normalizable, and I can define a map more or less in the same class. That is the following. There are these two smaller intervals inside that small one, the central domain, J tilde and I tilde and J tilde, in such a way that if you restrict the second iteration for this smaller interval, and the first iteration in this other interval, we'll have a map that looks like more or less the original one. So that's Fibonacci normalization. If you renormalize the size of this interval for the original size, so what you do is take a finite map that maps this smaller interval and the original size, and define a map like that. So now you have a new map in the same class of maps, and you can ask if it's renormalizable again and again and again and again. If you can renormalize this map F infinite many times in this sense, you say that this map is infinite normalized in the Fibonacci sense. This is a Fibonacci map. Okay. So let's call FD the class of all Fibonacci maps with critical order D. The behavior of this map depends on the critical order of the point, and I'm going to assume that D is an even number. So what about this Fibonacci map? So a Fibonacci map looks like that. And if you take the closure of the critical orbit, this is a post-critical set, it's called a post-critical set, and this set is a counter set, and you can look for the sets, the maximum invariant set of this map. So this dynamical system has a lot of holes, right? So most of the points in the topological sense escape. You cannot iterate, most of the points you cannot iterate this map infinite many times. So take the set of points where you can iterate this map infinite many times. So this is also a counter set. It contains this other counter set here. So there's basic questions about this set. First, the maximum invariant set has positive Lagrange measure. Second, if this has positive Lagrange measure, almost every point is attracted for this mesoretheoretical, for this other counter set inside. So what Fibonacci maps has to do with white attractors? First, I forget one of these maps. Okay, so the first thing is that white attractors, so let's first state what's the Fibonacci unimodal map. So that are the Fibonacci maps. And when you take a unimodal map, a Fibonacci with just one critical point like that one, G, so you say that is a Fibonacci unimodal map if you can find an induced map which is a Fibonacci map. Okay? So you can find three intervals, this and this and this one, in such a way that the restriction of the fifth iteration of the original map and the third iteration of the original map is a Fibonacci map. So that's a Fibonacci unimodal map. So let's call F uni of D the class of all Fibonacci maps. So what is nice about these Fibonacci unimodal maps? Well, let's assume that's real analytic. Okay? Let's make the things easier. So let's assume that's real analytic. Negative squares and derivatives and all the wonderful things. Okay, what is nice about these Fibonacci maps? First, these Fibonacci unimodal maps are a topological class of dynamical systems. And the topological attractor of Fibonacci unimodal maps always an interval. For a generic point, the orbit is dense in this interval. And the mesoretheoretical attractor can be two different things. This depends on the order of the critical point. Can be or the topological attractor, or this interval, or the post-critical set, that's the counter set. Okay? And this situation actually happens if D is very, very large. Let's say 32 or 100. Okay, if the order of the critical point is very big. Okay, now I introduce, you know, what's the Fibonacci map? I think so. So I can make my statements. So this theorem says that the assumptions in Martens and the Mellon results are sharp. If you take a Fibonacci unimodal map, so if this map has a wide attractor, then for every map, Fibonacci unimodal map, with the same critical order, the conjugacy is always absolutely continuous. So this is a topological class, so there is a conjugacy between F1 and F2, and this conjugacy is always absolutely continuous. So in this topological class of maps, you have always absolute continuity of the conjugacy. And of course, this conjugacy cannot be smooth because in this topological class, you can change the eigenvalues of the periodic points. And the reverse is also true. Suppose you have two Fibonacci unimodal maps, and there is a topological continuous, absolutely continuous conjugacy between these two maps. So in such a way that this conjugacy is not smooth, okay, or is not Lipschitz, or what is more or less the same thing, that there is a periodic point, in such a way the eigenvalue of this periodic point with respect to F is different for the eigenvalue with the corresponding point by the conjugacy of G, okay. If this happens, then all maps with the same critical order unimodal, Fibonacci unimodal maps, has a wide attractor. So the existence of wide attractors are related with the smoothness, the regularity of the conjugacy. It's the same thing. They're equivalent things. Okay? I can say something a little more about the Fibonacci unimodal map that maps to two branches. In this case, I can say a little more about the Julia set, the maximal invariant set. So one of the following, if you fix the order of the critical point, one of the following statements holds. R, the maximal invariant set of every Fibonacci map of that order has positive Lebesgue measure. Or, for every map with the same critical order, you have the Hausdorff dimension is 1 of this maximal invariant set, but the measure is 0. Or for everybody, the Hausdorff dimension is strictly smaller than 1. So that's a universality result, a mesothereoretical universality result for the class of unimodal maps, Fibonacci maps. Okay? Okay? So, I thought that I'm not going to work too much with infinite normalized maps, but I can state the result. But in some sense, this result is easier than the other two. So let F and G be unimodal maps, which are infinitely normalized in the classical sense, like Feigenbaum maps, and have bounded geometry. Bounded combinatorials, yes. Yeah, they have bounded geometry. And if F is topologically conjugate with G, then the conjugacy is always absolutely continuous. Okay? For instance, conjugacy between two Fibonacci maps of order Feigenbaum maps with order 2 is always absolutely continuous. So I would like to give you an idea of the proof. How to relate the existence of wide attractors with the regularity of the conjugacy. It seems to be totally different things. So how are we going to do that? So take a Fibonacci map. That's a little... take a Fibonacci map. So the Fibonacci map looks like that, right? So take a unimodal Fibonacci map. When you make the induction, you have this Fibonacci map, and if you make a new induction, or on the other hand, you find a map that in each PC, the map is a certain number of iterations of this original map. So take an induced map like that. Here is the iteration number 5 of the Fibonacci map. Here is the iteration number 8, 13, 21. That's exactly the Fibonacci sequence. That's probably why Milner and Liu they would call it the Fibonacci maps, I guess. Okay. So you have this nice induced map. Actually, there are infinite many branches converging to this point in the center. That is the ghost of the critical point. Okay? All right. So why I'm doing that? Because of the following. You have the Fibonacci unimodal map. And let's suppose the Fibonacci unimodal map has a wide attractor. Then this corresponds, with respect to this induced map, this corresponds to the following. That the maximum invariant set has positive Lebesgue measure and almost every point converges to the post-critical set. It's equivalent. With respect to this induced map, things get more easier. Because with respect to this complicated map, you have the following. Existence of wide attractors for the original map is equivalent that almost every orbit converges to the critical point, to the ghost of the critical point, in this map. So almost every point converges to this point here in the center. It's equivalent. Okay, but why this is nice? Well, because now you get rid of the critical points. Dynamical systems, dynamicists hate critical points, so they try to get rid of them, and we now make the critical points disappear, and you have an equivalent problem for this map. And this map is wonderful. This map is actually expanding. Markovian and everything nice. Okay? But I need to do a last step, and that's the new thing. Until here, it was made by Sebastian Van Strien, Wick, Keller, I guess, and Green. But the next step are going to be the important step in my work, is the following. There is a very special Fibonacci map that is exactly the fixed point for that normalization operator in such a way that this map, this induced map with infinitely many branches satisfies a functional equation, like looks like a Feigenbaum functional equation for some lambda smaller than 1. What this means? This functional equation means the following, that the dynamics of this induced map preserves some equivalence relation. So let's define the following relation between the real line. You say that x is equivalent to y if there is a power of that lambda in such a way that x is equal to a plus or minus a power of lambda multiplied by I, an integer power of lambda. So that functional equation says to you, say to us that this map, this induced map, preserves this equivalent relation. So what do I do when I have a dynamical system that preserves some relation? I take the quotient, right? So when I take the quotient of that crazy induced map by this equivalent relation, I obtain a very nice expanding Markovian map like that with infinite many branches. Of course, when I take the quotient, I lose information about my dynamical system, but I can recover most of that with one additional information. This is the following. When you take the quotient of R by that equivalent relation, I obtain this interval J here. So all these intervals are every class of equivalence have a unique representative in this small interval here. So I can identify the quotient of R by this equivalence relation with this J. So take a point in this J and apply this map F, capital F. They are going to fall somewhere. So let's say here. Okay? So if it is fall outside J, I need to multiply this number by a power of lambda to go back in J. So this defines a function which associates with each number x in this j, the number that you need to multiply, the power of lambda that you need to iterate to multiply by go back to j. So that's, I'm going to define it here. Take psi of j to the integer numbers that do exactly what I did. I take x belong to j, apply my induced map, and multiply by the correct power of lambda to go back to J. So that defines Pc of X, that's this power. Okay? So the dynamics of that crazy induced map is actually essentially the dynamics of a skew product of that quotient map, that skew is a Markov expanding map, and psi. Now things get much more easier to understand because what is the dynamics of F? So F star is this map here. This map for that special no, not the quotient. Q is the quotient. Okay? So Q is Markov expanding map and you have this skew product here. Okay? So in terms of this skew product, have a wide attractor means the following. I always lose my transparencies in the process. Yeah. So for this special Fibonacci map, I can take this quotient and associate a skew product. Some people call that a deterministic handle walk because of a handle. And the existence of a right attractor is equivalent to this sum, the Birkhoff sum of psi along the orbits of the Q, converged to plus infinity for almost every point. So now it's very easy to understand. Because, why is that? Because when you take the iteration of your skew product, k times, in the second coordinate appears this sum. And this second coordinate be very big, very positive, very very large, means you're very close to zero in the induced map, in this map here. Okay, so just to resume that information, we have this. Existence of a detractor implies for induced net, the iterations goes to zero, and to skew product, this is equivalent to go to infinity. Okay, but you can do that just for this special map which satisfies that functional equation, just the fixed point of the Fibonacci randomization operator. So what we can do about the other maps? For the other maps, you take a general Fibonacci map, you cannot take the quotient, but you can also make some translation in terms of it's not a skew product anymore, so you can see the dynamics like that. Now it's not a skew product because the first iteration, the first coordinate depends on the map, on the position n. But this new map, that's complicated one, much more complicated than the skew product a priori, is topologically conjugate with the skew product. And the conjugacy is very nice. Actually, the conjugacy does not distort the derivative very well, very much, in the following sense. Suppose you take a point xn, so it, just to make the things more clear, you can think that was a manifold with infinite many branches and take the derivative. Take the derivative here means take the derivative of the first coordinate, okay? So when you take the derivative of g star, that special skew product, you can compare that with the derivative of the corresponding point with the same dynamics for the general Fibonacci map. And you take the logarithm, this is very small if n is very big. Okay? So the conjugacy does not distort the derivative very much. You have that g is a very small asymptotic perturbation, small perturbation of the skew product. And why is that true? Because that special map f star, I already said, is a fixed point of a randomization operator. And actually this fixed point is hyperbolic, and the stable manifold is exactly the class of Fibonacci maps with degree d. Okay? Okay. So just to finish let me just give you an idea of how things work. So you can take this skew product who has a Hundle walk. So think the trivial Hundle walk like that. So you know that if the probability to move is q and 1 and skew to the right and to the left, you have a very nice characterization of when the skew product is recurrent, when it's transient, and so on. So the question is, what happens when you perturb your Hundle walk and you put some Klimt's positive inclinations and negative inclinations? Let's say that this perturb your Hundle walk. It's very hard to drunk people Klimt mountains. It's very hard to fall from mountains. So you have this perturbation. And you can ask, what happens with the Hundle walk now? The guy are going to, the drunk men are going to go back home, are going to be recurrent again, so you take a half and a half. So if this is a homogeneous Hundle walk, you are going to go back home infinite many times. So if you put a mountain, you are going to go back, and the answer is yes. If you put a mountain, if the original Hundle walk was transient, are going to remain transient. If it was recurrent, are going to remain recurrent. So recurrence and transient are stable by local perturbations of your Hundle walk. Actually, you can put a lot of mountains, an infinite number of mountains, decreasing very fast, and the map are going to, the Hundle walk are going to remain recurrent. So my situation is not so nice like that. It's not exactly a Hundle walk, but you have this deterministic Hundle walk, and you also make and put very small mountains in your dynamical system. That's what I mean by this small perturbation. And in terms of this skew product, we have this abstract setting. So we wanted to know the following. Suppose that this map is recurrent. Oh, sorry, this map, the skew product is recurrent. We wanted to know if the perturbation remains recurrent. If this map is transient, we wanted to know if the perturbation remains recurrent, transient. Okay? So for the skew product, it's very easy to answer these questions. If you have the drift, the skew product has a unique, this Q map, this spanning map, has a unique absolute continuous invariant measure. ergodic, and you can take the average of psi by this invariant measure. And if this psi is, this average is positive, are going to be transient, and if this psi is zero, are going to be recurrent. Very easy, it's L null thing. Okay? Okay. In terms of my original question, we have that the skew product CG is transient. That is the same that the existence of to infinity. This is the same that the existence of light attractors for the original map. Okay? So we have the following result. I don't have more time to give the idea, but we have the following result. Ah, I see it. Ah, okay. So you have psi, a null constant function. If the average is positive, if the mean drift is positive, the conjugacy between the skew product and the perturbation, the asymptotically small perturbation, is always absolutely continuous, and G is transient. What means that the original map has a wide attractor, and the conjugacy is absolutely continuous. If the average is smaller than zero, you have that G is transient to minus infinity, what means that almost every point escapes to the holes in this map, what means that the maximum invariant set has zero Lebesgue measure in this case, and you don't have a wide attractor. And in the third condition, G is recurrent, what also means that the points escape by the holes in this Fibonacci map, but escape very slowly, in such a way that the Hausdorff per dimension of the maximum invariant set in this case are going to be 1. And the conjugacy cannot be absolute continuous in this case. So this result is translated for that situation to prove the results for the Fibonacci unimodal map. Just a final observation. In the Fibonacci, in the Feigenbaum case, for instance, or infinite harmonizable case, you can do exactly what I did for Feigenbaum, for instance, but this average is always positive by topological reasons. So you don't have these two other cases. That's why the conjugacy is always absolutely continuous. Okay, thank you very much for attention.